You're listening to the Center Sage Podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Center Sage 2020. I've had a crazy last month. December and a little bit of Jan was crazy. A lot of travel, a lot of work, and falling really ill. But I'm super pumped about 2020, and I hope you guys are too. I think the first thing that you can conceive after listening to Center Sage in 2020 is how different the audio quality is. And I listened to your feedback. I listened to every message that you guys sent me, and I was really happy actually that of all the messages that came in, 95% were to do with just the audio quality. So I geeked out on some equipment, and I'm sure that it sounds way better. I'm actually super relieved that you guys said audio quality was your biggest issue and not my personality, because there's no changing that. We can upgrade audio quality, but there's my friends and family are forced to endure what I have to offer. So very excited about Center Sage 2020. Lots of big stuff coming up. Tell me about what you have in store for 2020, how you're smashing your goals. Very excited to hear that. So without much further ado, let's jump straight in into what we have for today. So if this is your first time here, welcome to Center Sage, the podcast where I seek out modern day sages and subject matter experts, talk to them about their coolest projects and their successes and their failures, and you get to pick up a thing or two. Super excited as always for today's show. Have a very interesting guest, someone who's been quite a long time friend and a huge inspiration for a lot of us. I think if I will have to introduce this person, he is definitely, I would say, traveler right at the top of his game. He's visited over 91 countries. The second way I would introduce him is he's a culture cross-pollinator, if that makes sense. He's like the bee of cultures that pollinates different flowers across the globe. It sounds a little bit sexual, but I don't know. Maybe that's something that'll come out later on the podcast. And he is the real deal when it comes to being a digital nomad. I know this word is thrown around a lot, but trust me, this guy is definitely the OG here. You probably already know who I'm talking about, just because he's got so many friends, not only in Bangalore, not only in Karnataka and India, but all across the globe. Mr. Saurav Arya, everybody. How are you doing, Saurav?
Hey, so glad to be here, hey. Marvin. And first of all, thank you so much for the word cultural cross-pollinator. I'm going to use that in
you
my bio now.
You can use that. That's on me. That's on the house. That's on Center Sage. Yeah, I'm very happy to have you here. Thank you so much for agreeing to do the podcast at 8 a.m. on a Saturday morning, man.
It's absolutely
Yeah, it's quite an absurd request, I know, but I'm so glad that we can sit down here in this nice, quiet place that you have and do this. So first podcast guest of 2020 on Center Sage. Thank you so much, Saurav. Let's just dive straight into it. So we were talking about goals in 2020, right? Everyone's got these big, audacious goals. Everyone's got amazing things, going to get super fit. But I saw that you now have like an accountability group or something like that, right? Yeah. How is that going?
Yeah, so I figure that most of us, all we need is someone to push us a little bit. We need an accountability group to make our goals into reality. And fortunately, that came out well so far. It's been almost 17 days. And I'm so happy to see that everyone who's part of the group, they're posting updates. We have two groups of 20 Ooh. People. And they have shared their 20 goals for the year. And we share regular updates. I'm so happy and excited about it.
That is awesome. So you guys like check in on each other and check off boxes every day?
Absolutely. Yeah.
That is awesome, man. Yeah. And is doing a podcast somewhere on that list of things that you want to do this year? Can we check something off by doing this?
So as I said, I would like to host a podcast. So yes, hosting a podcast is there in the list.
Yeah. All right. So we didn't make it to Saurav's list this time, but hopefully in some way I can probably help you with that as well.
Absolutely.
But great. I think accountability is super important, because I think a lot of us start a lot of things with a lot of like Josh, right? But then it slowly dies down. And that's why consistency, I think, is so important. Speaking of being consistent, you are very consistent with traveling. Like, that's one thing that probably if there's one word that defines you, Saurav, is it fair to say that traveler is that one word that can really define who Saurav is?
Yes, but like for me, traveling is not just about going to different places and different countries. I feel that traveling is all about being curious, like a 4-year-old.
Yeah, you know? That makes a lot of sense. So you have a lot of curiosity because you visited 91, correct, to this date?
Yeah.
91 out of 198 now? We are at 198?
Right, yeah.
So, I mean, that's a lot of curiosity. And like me, it looks like you haven't grown since you were 4 years old. I know I'm the same person.
Sorry to cut you short here, but like I listened to one of your podcasts and where you mentioned that you didn't have the kind of childhood you wanted, right? And I think that has a lot to do with what we do later on in our life. I think we are trying to live our childhood days now. And it's great that we have kept our 4-year-old or 5-year-old alive right now. You know, man, I see you monkeying around, and you know, it's like you're an inspiration as well.
Thank you, man. I wish my mom would be listening right now. Ma, look, monkeying around. I'm inspiring people by monkeying around. So thank you so much for that, Saurav. So just to start off on this entire journey of travel, right?
Yeah.
So I know last year you did 17 countries.
Yes.
And that's probably more than what most of us have done in our lifetimes. So Saurav, how do you choose? Do you just put a blindfold on yourself and say, I want to go there. I've never heard of this country before. I want to go. And do you just like pin the donkey's tail on the map, or how does it start?
No, I'm not into planning. I'm the kind of guy who believes in a jump off the cliff and then build your wings on the way down. So every year at the beginning of the year, I don't have any idea where I'm going. But then opportunities present itself, and then just I go with the flow.
And do you plan a succession of countries according to the first country you visit, just so you can make the most of that region?
Yes. So a little bit of planning is required just to secure visa, but most of the things are on the go. So yes, I just plan the visa strategy part. You know, it's like if I'm going to Southeast Asia, or if I'm going to South America, I should know that which country visa I need to secure in advance. Like, because there are some countries you can't get visa to from a third country. You know, so like South Africa, for example, then Argentina, like that.
And I'm so glad you brought up visa, just because do you have an Indian passport by any chance?
Yes, of course. I have an Indian passport.
So you're very well aware of the challenges. And yeah. I hear a lot of Indian backpackers talk, and myself included. Yeah. I wouldn't say I travel a lot as a backpacker, but I do travel on work to a lot of countries. Mm-hmm. And it's not only a grievance from the backpacking community, but also generally as a holder of an Indian passport, things are probably 5 times harder, or in some countries 100 times harder, just because you check the checklist of every immigration. You're brown, you're male, you have an Indian passport, blah, 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 third world country, blah, blah, blah. So how do you, but you still manage to go through and go to some really fantastically weird countries as well, right? And some very restrictive countries. How do you do that, man?
Yeah, like I feel that knowing a bit about what strategy you should follow does help. For example, if you have any first world country visa, if you have a Schengen visa, if you have a US visa, it helps you a lot. Couple of times I just got lucky. For example, in the last country I was in was Turkmenistan. And I read this data that they almost 90% of the time they reject you, all right, for no reason. They don't disclose, all right.
Okay.
So I was in that region. I was in Uzbekistan. And
what a great way to encourage tourism, right? That's an ad for the Turkmenistan tourism industry, right there.
About tourism,
I've got gas.
Yeah, exactly. So I was with my brother in Uzbekistan, and we thought that okay, let's give it a try. We are very close by. So we got in touch with a tourist agent, and we applied, and we read that on Lonely Planet Thorn Tree that, you know, almost 90% of the visa application gets rejected. But then within a week, fortunately, we got acceptance, and then like we got in. And the whole experience was like going to North Korea.
Like, have you been there, by the way?
I haven't been there. Ooh. I've been to some North Korean restaurants, which are like North Korea, you know, restaurants by North Korean government.
Who escaped, who made tourism. It out alive.
Yeah, yeah.
to promote tourism. So exactly. These restaurants are funded by the North Korean government to share North Korean culture with people.
Absolutely.
And which country was this then?
I was in Cambodia. There,
oh, wow.
So, that's quite an experience because I went there and I saw that everything was staged, as in, like...
Everything's amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing performance, leader, but you're not allowed to take videos or take pictures. Okay. But I managed to take a video that I posted on YouTube.
Sneaky sort.
Yes. And, you would find, it's like lots of models. It's like you will feel that, you know, it's too good to be true.
Yes,
you know?
Yes. And funnily, I also experienced this. I was in China last month. Uh-huh. And it's sort of so perfect that you start questioning if this is what reality really is, right? Yeah. And I think that is kind of the image that North Korea wants to present. And I may be wrong. I mean, until you travel there, you really don't know, right?
Yeah.
But speaking of that, what's like the biggest misconception that you've heard of in a country, and then you land there and then you're like, boom, this makes whatever I've heard about it now makes no sense anymore.
Iran, for example, like if you read, you will find lots of negative news, and you'll read that it's probably not a very safe place to travel, but it was such an amazing place. Like everyone I met there were extremely friendly, and everywhere I went, I felt very safe, you know. And talking about infrastructure, also it was surprising for me. Like their buses was far better than the bus we have here.
BMTC.
In India. Yeah, no, not just BMTC.
Oops, okay.
I'm talking about not just BMTC. I'm talking about the classy buses, the sleeper buses, AC sleeper buses. So they have much better than what we have.
That's quite interesting. And how was your experience? Did you travel the length and breadth of Iran? Because it's a huge country, right? Not a lot of people recognize that.
Yes. So last time I went there, I had a chance just to go to Isfahan and Tehran. I spent a couple of days in Isfahan, which is the cultural capital of Iran, and then in Tehran. Yeah. But I have to go there again for Shiraz and other places.
Yeah. So the first time I was asked to travel actually was when I was working for the government. And I was working on a missile project, and we had these quite old Israeli scientists who came in, and they said, "How old are you?" And I said, 21 years old. They said, "What the hell are you doing in an office, man? What are you doing? You should be out there traveling." And the more I started talking to him, right, the more he started explaining how he's a scientist, he works in science and aerodynamics and very sciencey mathematical kind of stuff. But he said the best education he's ever got is through travel. So that kind of got me thinking, if I can learn stuff through travel, can I apply that like in my day-to-day life, in running a business, for example? So one thing that really helped me was the ability to think on your feet when you travel, because it never goes according to plan, right? There's always something, you miss a bus, you don't know the language. But do you have these kind of these learnings where where you learn something in a country because you're in a certain situation, and then you start applying it to business and things like that?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I can go on and on telling you about that. And I absolutely agree with you that, you know, the learning happens on the road when you're all on the move. See, it's like most of us, we are forced to live a very template lifestyle here in India, right? You do your schooling, you do your graduation. By the time you're doing your graduation, you kind of have idea about, you know, where you're going to land, right? You know that what kind of job you're going to get, and then you carry on with that. But I feel that most of us, we are not able to, we fail to explore ourselves because we don't give ourselves that time. I mean, for some reason, gap year has not been a culture here, but that needs to be brought up because that will give youngsters time to really explore themselves. I mean, in my case, after working for 5 years in 9 to 5, I took a gap year, and that changed everything. You know, year full of Sundays in 2012, that changed absolutely everything. I after that, I could not imagine going back to 9 to 5. That 1 year was so eventful. So many things happened that I felt that, okay, that's it.
Yeah, what is this about, the year full of Sundays? Can you maybe explain that a little bit?
Sure. So by end of 2011, I had this feeling that, hey, I lived 9 to 5 for 5 years. Probably I need a break. So I decided to live a year where I won't think about making money. I won't have a boss or a subordinate. Just I'll live every day like it's a Sunday. Okay, so usually on a Sunday, you don't have a plan and you loaf around and you decide as you go. So in January, I decided to circumnavigate India. First, I decided to go all around India. And then I felt I should just travel to places where I can easily go. So first, I went to Southeast Asia, then to China, then to East Africa. So that was the entire year. And by the end of year, I realized that, oh, wow, that was such an eventful year. Like every day was so full of events that I felt like I lived 10 years in that 1 year. And then I started reading about how to travel along with your work. Then I started reading Tim Ferriss and Chris Galabio, you know, how to live location independent and how to build a small business which you can handle from anywhere. So yeah, after that, I got into remote businesses and small businesses.
And then your life changed. And this is the pivotal point in the movie where the hero decides. But very cool. I'm very glad we took that small turn because, traveling is one thing, but this whole concept of a digital nomad, right? Like at least a lot of us in India, we have this vision or we have this idea that a digital nomad is someone who's probably living in Bali 90% of the time and is probably like a developer or somebody who's into dropshipping or one of these keywords. But you run an infographics agency, you run a chain of like hostels. You're also a realtor, right? If I can call it that. You've done all these different things, which is not, again, a traditional digital nomad. So Tim Ferriss, again, points you in a particular direction in terms of what you can do and what's viable. But it looks like you found your own way. How did that happen?
Yeah, so see, I agree. When the digital nomad thing started, when location independent thing started, you can say that people who were into remote work, they were limited to only certain profiles. But now, it's much more broader. You would find all different kind of nomads, different kind of shits from all different locations. They are not just limited to Southeast Asia anymore. We have big nomad destinations in South America. Buenos Aires, for example, is tops the list when it comes to Americas. Also in Africa, there are nomad spots coming up. So yes, in my case, it was just about doing things that I'm passionate about. Being a host was something which was very close to my heart. So I have been an Airbnb host since 2013, and I felt that all the travelers, they need to share their experiences in one way or the other. Some travelers blog. I love to share experiences by meeting people. That's why I started my hospitality ventures. The Small World is all just about world cultures. This place, Workstays, is all about hosting digital nomads, solopreneurs, and freelancers. So it was just an extension of everything I've been passionate about. So when it came to small businesses, I just thought about, hey, what would be fun to do? I did not do much of a business study or trying to figure out, hey, where I can make more money.
Okay, yeah, and I think that makes a lot of sense. It puts a lot of things in perspective, but in order to travel, right, you need, in a sense, an automated income or something like a passive income, as Tim Ferriss calls it. But, I mean, all of these ventures need a very active kind of a role in terms of especially being a host, right? It's one thing to start a venture, but in order to keep that culture and that spirit and that soul, it almost requires Saurav to be sitting there in front of you. How do you kind of automate this when you're on your travels and make sure things are running smooth, but also it retains that soul that you bring to it?
Right, I agree. Is that when it comes to hosting, you have to be on the top of it. And I think hiring the right people is the key. You know, business is just about rallying people together. And if you bring right people together, they do wonders. So so yes, like I feel that if I have to scale a Small World and Workstays, I just have to make sure that I hire the right person. So far, I have been able to automate just because I managed to get the right people who can run it in my absence when I'm traveling around.
Yeah, that I think that's very cool. But moving on to, I guess, something that not a lot of us have experience in. You also, I guess, own most of Koramangala. Okay. In a sense, and I think that is again something that's very different, because the real estate game in Bangalore is not something that a lot of young people think of. I think it's a great kind of investment, because if you look at some of the richest young people, they are all invested in real estate, and you really are invested in probably one of the highest most expensive localities, very bougie neighborhood. But how did that start as well? Because I know it's a very messy game. It's a very unclean, I would say, game. And mostly most landlords and real estate people are not the nicest people. They are, I mean, in plain words, they're kind of dicks. Just call it out sometimes. But in terms of things like that, so I'm sure it must have been quite foreign to you to get into that. And do you think this is contributing in a lot to your passive income and its ability to fund your travels?
When I started that time, no one had any idea about short-term rental. And if I would approach a landlord, they would probably, they won't entertain this idea that, hey, if you're taking my place, why are you hosting someone else over there? You know, it's like I'm not happy about it, and I don't want to go that way, right? But like now in 2020, we have so many landlords who know about this. And when they see the profile, when they see that, all right, okay, you have been hosting for long and you can take care of everything, then that's fine. You can take up the space. So I think over the last 7 years, a lot has changed, especially in places like South Bangalore, in Koramangala. And there's so many landlords who are not even living in Bangalore. Like they are somewhere outside. So they just need someone who can manage their property while they are away. So I think now we are moving towards a time where landlords itself, they will come to you and offer you places. For example, both in the case of Small World and Workstays, it's not me approaching the landlord. He approached me and say that, all right, wow, I know that you have been into Airbnb, and I would rather prefer to give my space to an Airbnb hostpreneur rather than giving it to OYO or to other such
burn
businesses.
OYO.
Yeah.
No. That's really cool. I love how things are changing slowly. Honestly, I haven't maybe had the best experience with a lot of landlords in Bangalore. But I mean, as you said, South Bangalore, if you're leading the charge, then that's amazing. But just continuing on that line of thought, you're talking about how new destinations are coming up for digital nomads. Can Bangalore be considered, or in India, what are the top destinations, and can Bangalore be considered as a digital nomad destination?
Absolutely. I feel that Bangalore and Goa is going to be the spot in India. And here is why. So I see that when it comes to deciding which place would be ideal for nomads, a lot of sites like Nomadlist, what they consider is that, hey, how's the quality of life? What are the things to do around? How's the Wi-Fi speed and all? One criteria they have not been considering is how easy it is for a nomad, for a solopreneur, to collaborate with other techies or a designer, right? If I'm going to write to Peter Levels about this, and I'll make sure he includes this as a criteria. And if that comes, I think Bangalore's going to rank really high, because I have heard this from many nomads. They come over here to build their product, and it's so easy and cheap for them to build their product because of availability of the techies and designers, you know. So I do see that many solopreneurs, many nomads are coming to Bangalore, and in the future it will skyrocket, just because it's very friendly for makers, for, you know, solopreneurs and early stage startups, especially this part of Bangalore, which is greener, which is, I think in Koramangala, you can walk around, you're not that troubled by the traffic, right?
So I guess comparatively, yes, the answer is yes. But I mean, digital nomads kind of look for locations that balance a large availability of talent and infrastructure, and balance that with a carefree kind of a life, where they live in a very, a better standard. So, I mean, Bangalore does offer a huge pool of talent, right? But in terms of life in terms of things outside of work, you think Bangalore can match up to places like Bali and parts of East Africa?
No, I don't think that. I mean, Bali is absolutely, that's the favorite destination, and it's going to remain that. I'm not talking about Bangalore getting anywhere close to Bali, okay. Chiang Mai or Bangkok at all. Right? But when it comes to nomad destinations in India, I'm saying that Bangalore definitely has an edge over New Delhi, Hyderabad, Chennai, Mumbai, and Pune as well. You know.
And so if someone, say, from Bangalore or somewhere else, wanted to get into this kind of a lifestyle, right? For you, it was, you took a year off and you said, what was it called? 12 months of Sundays?
A
year full of Sundays. But do you think that if someone was to flip their life around, yeah. And I think this is a very strong, I guess, a campaign that you do, right? You kind of really push and try to help people live the life that they want to live. But if someone was to say, I'm very tired of my 9-to-5, Saurav, Baba, please help me, like, flip my life around. Where do I start? I've got all of these ideas, but I can't quit my job because of iPhone ka EMI bharna padega and this and that. So where does it all start, and how do you start? Does it start in the mind?
The way I started was very different, but in 2020, the game is absolutely different, all right? So, see, when I started in 2009, I luckily got into a job which allowed me to work from anywhere. It was in 2009, November, I was working for a British startup, and they told me that, all right, you have to manage business in India and Sri Lanka, and we really don't care where you set up an office or where you work remotely, just get the work done, all right? And that time, there was no talk about digital nomad or location independence, right? And I thought that, all right, okay, let's see how it goes working from home. And it was tough. Like that time, I didn't have any idea that working from home also means that working remotely and being location independent and travel around. So I was like working from my bed. And it took a toll on my health.
From my actual home,
But then slowly I started traveling, and then I like also because that time I was not thinking about working remotely because Wi-Fi was also not available everywhere. It's like that was not 2009 was not the time where you'll get Wi-Fi in all the cafe and all the hostels.
Was there any cafe that had like a free Wi-Fi kind of thing? What about Cafe Coffee Day? I feel like they've been around forever.
Yeah, they have been around, but I think that Wi-Fi was a pain like that time.
Yeah.
You know, you'll have to stick to, your own home or a place where you're secure. You know that you will definitely get Wi-Fi. But then by 2011, I started traveling around in India. I took some international trips, and I managed to get the work done. You know, so like that was like 4 or 5 hours of work, and that worked well. But now what I feel is that being a digital nomad is not about a choice. It's a compulsion, you know. In 2020, it's not about, hey, whether you want to be a digital nomad or not, you'll be forced to be a digital nomad, trust me. In the coming days, that's going to happen. Because like most of the businesses, they are choosing to go remote. You know, they don't want to have a physical location. They want to hire the best talent from all around the world, right? So, yeah, it's I mean, there will be different setup, like whether you'll be working for a company remotely or whether you are an on-demand employee or whether you're working for yourself. I think we have lots of options. And the students these days, they are anyway making money from on-demand economy and share economy. So being a nomad, being a solopreneur, working for themselves is, I think, their by default way rather than going 9-to-5 way.
So speaking of shared economy and even the gig economy, right, they say that's going to be the future where you're not confined to one company, but you develop your skill to a point where you're basically very short-term consultant for a bunch of different companies.
Yeah.
So my question is that I right now work with a company 100% remote. We have people all across the globe who work on different parts of the project. But as someone who's spent the last 3-ish years working in an office or actually having to fly to different locations to meet clients, I represent a little bit of the old-fashioned kind of a community, maybe a dying community in the future. But what I've realized is that I feel like if you work with someone physically, right, the work just gets done faster, more efficiently. There's a better interpersonal connect. If there's an issue, I'm going to say, hey, Saurav, this is my issue. Can we probably work on that? But if you're working across the globe in different time zones, I probably have to wait till tomorrow for Saurav to get up in Hawaii, which is 15 and a half hours away from India. And my question is, if we are moving towards an economy that's 100% remote, do you think we're going to maintain this level of efficiency that we would have in a traditional office? Or is there some way to combat that?
So yes, definitely we need better tools to make the remote work more productive. I feel that, presently the tools which we use for remote meeting, those are not enough. I agree with you is that a lot of times when you are physically there, it's much more effective. So I can see that some businesses are going for the hybrid model. They allow their employees to work remotely for 2-3 days in a week, but the rest of the days they want them to come there. But then, as I told you, is that so many businesses are anyway choosing to go remote because to save their costs. And they are trying their best to, to make it work, all right? So, of course, like when you're working remotely, it has its own pros and cons. But I think that there are more factors which are fueling the remote work, you know? So I feel that overall there's going to be a rise in the number of remote businesses and remote employees. I'm not saying that we're going to go completely 100% remote. Not all the employees are going to be working remotely. So with the data we have and the way we are growing, like what's the estimation is by 2035, we're going to have around 1 billion remote workers, 1 billion digital nomads.
1 billion
with
a B.
Yeah, exactly. That's
holy
gonna be,
hell.
That's one third of the total workforce. So total workforce that time going to be 3 billion. All right, mm-hmm. So out of that, one third will be remote workers. That is still a big number, you know.
And yeah, that's amazing. So with tools, what do you think could probably help? What tool is missing right now from our whole arsenal of tools? Sorry, what do you think is that one tool that could probably help bridge this connect between remote versus traditional workspaces?
I think that maybe a very extremely good VR tool might help, you know, when you can feel that, okay, that person is just in front of you. And as you say, that body language is also makes a big difference when you're working with your colleague, right? So I think VR tool would be of great help.
Yeah, a lot of companies are investing heavily in VR and AR. One of the biggest ones is Pornhub, actually.
Right, okay.
And I can see why they're doing that. But do you think that VR and AR could also perhaps help in terms of travel and things like that? Because I think, as you said, you are someone who doesn't like to travel so much or doesn't like to plan so much, before travel. But I'm sure a lot of people would want to plan to every detail. I'm a little bit on that side. But in terms of VR and AR, do you think that's something that could really help the travel industry in terms of experiences and experiential kind of information?
Absolutely, because I think that, when it comes to travel, now, travel is synonymous with sustainable travel. You know, you have to take into account that, you are making sure that, environment is not being hampered and, you're traveling sustainably, right? And if you can have a great experience without any CO2 emission, why not? That's great. And as I told you, is that my idea of travel is not just about flying or going to a certain place. It's all about immersion. It's about being curious. And sometimes we need sometimes we fail to travel in our own city, isn't it? So we need a different pair of eyes to see our own city. A lot of times when I have a friend visiting from other country, he will tell me things about my city that I had no idea about. Right. So that's also travel. Yeah. So yes, I agree with you is that I feel the way we travel is going to change and VR is going to help us a lot in that. Also, see, so presently I'm hosting, every second week I'm hosting Cultural Immersion, which is,
yes.
So which is about travel. So it gives people an idea about how is that to be in that country through its food and drinks and art forms and music and dance. You know?
Yeah. So just to switch gears a little bit back to travel. So you said you're curious, right? When you go to a country, you don't look at guidebooks. You maybe just browse over Lonely Planet and see that your visa is going to get rejected, but you still apply anyway. So in cases like that, how does one go to a completely new country without knowing the language or anything or having any friends? Do you just like walk on the street and pick out something interesting and say, hey, I'm going to go try that? Or how does this curiosity play into your entire itinerary when you travel, just so you can get the most authentic experience?
All right. So, I usually glance through WikiTravel. WikiTravel is, I think, it's a most updated source of information. Everyone keeps on updating it there. So, I just glance through it so that I know that, all right, I have overall idea, but I don't go for, like, you know, all the pages, scanning all the pages of Lonely Planet or caring about every little detail of the place. Yeah, man, I feel that the world is boringly safe, you know, so I'm not going to die by eating anything or being somewhere,
Yeah. Okay?
So, like, I have been to places which in news seems extremely dangerous, like in Xinjiang, in Kashgar and Urumqi, there are tanks on the street, but it's still safe for travelers.
In Xinjiang, in China?
Yeah.
Wow. Is it open to go there? Can foreign travelers enter Xinjiang and generally like converse with people and interact? I've heard like really scary things about it.
Yeah, so I was there in 2005. That time you could easily go. It's open to tourists, just that it's not very well connected. So it's like if you're taking a train from Chengdu, it's going to take you 2 days to get there. And once you are there, you won't see many travelers there. There are some cyclists who are cycling from all the way from Europe to Far East Russia, and you will see them crossing the borders.
Like the Silk Route.
Yeah. But you won't see many travelers, but still it's a great place. It's extremely beautiful, the region. They have amazing grasslands, Nalati grassland, and some areas close to the Russia border. It's worth going. So when I was there, I could see that it was heavily militarized. There were tanks on the streets. There were snipers everywhere.
What? Yeah. How is this not scary, man? Oh, wait, this is what turns you on, right? You're like, yes, let's go there.
No, but I feel like why the hell they would hurt travelers? Like, okay, I understand what's going on in that region, but probably the travelers are safe in most of the places. I was there in Kenya, very close to Somalia. Like in Lamu, little north from Mombasa. And I could see many Somalians getting into Kenya that time. And but it for travelers, it was perfectly fine. It was all right. Yeah,
but have you been in some very sticky situation where you're like, oh, fuck, this is it, guys. Okay, now I've really screwed myself.
You can't avoid it. Of course, it happened many times. In Xinjiang, once what happened is that I was roaming around alone, okay, and my wife, she was waiting for me at a bus station, okay, and it was almost more than a month of backpacking. So I had, like, long beard. I was not shaven for months, and a policeman saw me, and he kind of felt that, okay, he looks maybe like a militant, or I don't know what he's doing here. So he just called his office that, hey, looks like there's someone we need to interrogate. And I saw him looking at me, and then I felt that it could be dangerous. So I started running towards, started walking towards a bus station. And when I arrived at the bus station, when I saw my wife, I saw a group of 12 policemen running towards me. So
like running, like charging exactly. At you. They're like, ah!
Yeah, they were running towards me. And then I started running towards my wife, and then I hugged her.
What? What? is going on? Is this like, it sounds like you guys are playing hide and seek or something. You run away, 12 people are chasing you, you hug your wife. Yeah, and your wife is like, why are you bullying me into it? It's your fault. I don't have a beard.
So, yeah, it was dramatic. But then they came and they just asked for my passport.
Yeah.
They saw Indian passport and then they were fine. Like, all right, that's okay. So it was because like you know, they have the issue. They suspect everyone who is wearing a skull cap or having a beard over there in Xinjiang, and there are notices everywhere that hey, please don't wear a skull cap or please don't have long beard.
Okay, so you can't even. And what about the style of dressing and things like that? Is that also regulated in terms of?
Yes, and it's. In China, in Xinjiang, they are trying to suppress the local Uyghur population, and they're bringing a lot of Han people to change the demographics there. Yeah, it's a long topic to discuss about.
Yeah,
you know,
it's a long, politics. Heavy topic that's probably not for this podcast, but I'm sure we can discuss it sometime later. But that's really cool. So, I mean, we've spoken about your travels, your adventures, your crazy fascination for danger and your love of that. And we've also spoken about how you've been able to automate and also run these three very different businesses while you're on your travels. But I mean, what's really amazing is that you have managed to marry both of those things with Small World, right? And also, it's really crazy how you came up with the idea of Small World. Maybe you can talk about that.
Sure, yeah. So I was on a flight from Delhi to New York, and I was in a Bombay flight, and they don't have in-flight entertainment. So I just had a piece of paper and a pen to
scribble around. That's a long flight, man. Yeah, must have been a huge paper.
Yeah.
And that maybe probably that's why the Huawei doesn't exist anymore, unfortunately. But oopsie.
Yeah. So I was scribbling, and then this idea came to my mind that, hey, I love traveling. I love sharing experience. And I have not been vlogging or blogging about my travels. Like, most of my notes are still lying in my Evernote, and I feel really bad about it. That I feel that's a crime. I feel that we must share what we experience. So I felt that, all right, I have a place where I can bring both of these interests. Like, I can build a place, an experiential stay place, where people can get a glimpse of different countries just by staying there. So that's what Small World is. It's a 15 studio apartment, each themed after a different country. You get into a Japanese room, and you're teleported to Japan through its design, through books, through music, like that. And we have an event space where we host regular cultural immersion events. Like, every 15 days, we celebrate a new country.
Yeah, that's really cool. So anyway, that's been really, really interesting. So Small World, travel, digital nomad. But one thing that really unites all of those is your ability to click pictures while you're traveling solo. How in the world do you pull that off, Saurabh? Because every time I travel solo, I get amazing pictures of the landscape, the mountains, the sunrise. But I can only get a damn selfie, man. How in the world do you manage to get like these amazing pictures? I know you have a drone, I think, or a well-trained dragonfly who can also carry a DSLR. But how do you do it, man? You document these travels so well, and with you in the frame. So
yeah, I'm gonna take a workshop on that.
If you're good at something, monetize it, right? Boom, bada boom, baby. Yeah, that's really cool. But do you have like an entire kit of photographic toys or?
There are some frugal ways to take very high quality and good images. So I just use a tripod and remote shutter. You know, most of the pictures are taken with a remote shutter, you know, like, trying to look very candid. And
I mean, it's working. It's clearly working. I couldn't see the remote in your palm, but next time I'm going to watch out for you, Saurabh. I'm going to look at your palm.
Right.
But that's really interesting as well. I hope to be able to take better pictures.
I'm going to teach you just after this podcast.
Absolutely. Yeah, actually, yeah, we can do that. We can have a nice candid conversation like we're doing right now and just someone like put it inside the palm of my hand. But that's really interesting, man. So, okay. So Saurav is actually already, you carry it at all times, don't you? Just in case you need a random candid picture, in case of emergency, press button. And most people are thinking you're calling the police or something. But no, it's a remote shutter button. So Saurav, very, very interesting conversation. Just to wrap it up, where are you going next? Do you have any idea or any inclination at all? Or
I have no idea at all.
So where do you want to go? Like in an ideal world where there are no visas, there's amazing, I don't know, people and no money problems.
Yeah, high on my list are Papua New Guinea, Vanuatu, Tuvalu, all these places in Pacific. I mean, I want to go to all the places where I haven't. It's still a long way to go. It's been 91 and I'm on this quest to visit all the countries. So yeah, let's see. I'll let you know once I decide and plan.
Absolutely, guys. So if you guys are interested to follow Saurav on his travels and wherever he goes, I will link Saurav's Instagram handle in the description. It's at the Indian Digital Nomad,
that's
correct?
Right, yeah.
And apart from that, also his work around that. So if it's the infographics, it's informative infographics, right, if that's correct. And we also have Workstays where we are right now. It's a wonderful place where you can come and work and also stay, as the name suggests, Workstay. So apart from that, bunch of cool things that are happening, cultural immersions. And I think if you want to really flip your life around, if you feel that burn, that kind of a strain, that you're doing something that you are not built or not born to do, I think Saurav is the guy to talk to, because 9 to 5 is great. 9 to 5 works, but if you want to really live your life, right? And I think Saurav, you were also talking about that. You have lived probably 100 lives in the last decade. And I think that's all it is. It's that I love how you bring this joie de vivre. Thanks for the French cultural immersion, but I love how you bring this like love of life to everything. And it's more about, you've got this life, you've got this one life. What are you going to make out of it, right? What are you going to see? What are you going to learn? What are you going to experience? So I absolutely love that. I'm very enamored by that idea. I really think I need to travel more. Having a remote job now is helping me, but now I've got everything lined up, but I need to act on that. So absolutely, I would love to come talk to you. And all of you guys listening out there on the interwebs, if you really think that this is something that you want to do, flip your life, follow Saurav, but also, can they come talk to you?
Absolutely.
You think,
I'm happy to help people shift from 9 to 5 to a digital nomad. They can definitely get in touch and I can do all I can from my side to make sure that they succeed in being a digital nomad.
Great. You should regrow that beard and then start a religion. I'm sure you'll have the 1 billion remote workers will all come to you. So that'll be fantastic. Anyway, Saurav, thank you so much for taking the time out on an early, kind of chilly Saturday morning. I think it was a fantastic conversation.
Everybody,
we covered
so
all the major parts. And thank you so much.
Thank you, Marvin.
I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did making it. So I'm going to introduce a new segment called The Sage Lowdown. And the reason for that is just because of the diversity of topics that we cover during these episodes. It's very hard to keep track of everything that's happening, but also to take away these one or two nuggets that you can probably implement in your lives. So just to give you a TLDR lowdown of what happened or what really struck me during my talk with Saurav, I think two big things. One, his massive curiosity to question everything that is possibly questionable, and go ahead and do stuff that most people say that you can't do. So try it yourself, and backing that up with a strong plan of action. So if you look at a lot of examples that he gave, whether it's setting up his ability to have a large real estate portfolio, his ability to travel to countries that most people with Indian passports really think twice, thrice about, or even any passport, with his example that he gave about Turkmenistan. So I think these two qualities, again, are quite recurring, even if we look at some of our last guests, whether it's Dina or Shanky. The ability to dream big, the ability to back that up with positive and consistent action, I think that's really amazing. So if you enjoy Center Sage and you really like what I'm doing, I would really appreciate it if you subscribe to this podcast wherever you're listening to it from. I think Center Sage is now available on 10 different platforms across the interwebs. Go ahead, rate, review, and subscribe, and tell your friends about it. It goes a long way in helping me out. Thank you so much, guys. Have a great day.